Navalny invades Venezuela and kidnaps Maduro. The president of peace just kidnapped the leader of another country to distract from his own publicly known and verifiable actions as a PDF file. There's very little information at this moment. We have supposedly kidnapped Maduro and his wife and flown them out of the country. We bombed a military base and possibly other structures. We put our own military boots on the ground of another nation. Now, to be clear, Maduro is a piece of shit. He's done incredibly terrible things and doesn't deserve sympathy of any kind. But this is an unsanctioned act of war. Without any authorization from Congress, it is beyond the powers of a president. He didn't even wait to get a rubber stamp from the legislature he controls. This is a very, 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 very bad escalation of his authoritarian nonsense. Also, it's worth noting, he got yet another cognitive test this morning. So, to recap, a demented old narcissist sent the American military to a foreign nation and kidnapped their leader to distract from his declining mental health and vile actions against literal children. And all of this is wrapped up in the fragile male ego of Pete Hegseth and blatant racism of Stephen Miller. This is not normal.
And Mr. President, if you are declaring war against these cartels and Congress is likely to approve of that process, why not just ask for a declaration of war?
Well, I don't think we're going to necessarily ask for a declaration of war. I think we're just going to kill people that are bringing drugs into our country. Okay? We're going to kill them. You know? They're going to be, like, dead. Okay?
We can't take a chance after having done this incredible thing last night of letting somebody else take over where we have to do it again. We can do it again, too. Nobody can stop us. There's nobody that has the capability that we have.
Colombia is very sick, too, run by a sick man who likes making cocaine and selling it to the United States. And he's not going to be doing it very long, let me tell you.
What does that mean? He's not going to be doing it very long.
He's not doing it very long. He has cocaine mills and cocaine factories. He's not going to be doing it very long.
So there will be an operation by the U.S. and...
It sounds good to me. And Cuba is ready to fall, you know?
Yes.
Cuba looks like it's ready to fall. I don't know if they can hold out. But Cuba now has no income. They got all of their income from Venezuela, from the Venezuelan oil. They're not getting any of it. And Cuba literally is ready to fall. And you have a lot of great Cuban Americans that are going to be very happy about this.
Are you considering U.S. action in Cuba?
We're not. I think it's just going to fall. I don't think we need any action. It looks like it's going down. It's going down for the count. You ever watch a fight?
I have.
They go down for the count. And Cuba looks like it's going down. By the way, you have to do something with Mexico. Mexico has to get their act together because they're pouring through Mexico, and we're going to have to do something. We'd love Mexico to do it. They're capable of doing it. But unfortunately, the cartels are very strong in Mexico. We need Greenland from a national security situation. It's so strategic. Right now, Greenland is covered with Russian and Chinese ships all over the place. We need Greenland from the standpoint of national security. And Denmark is not going to be able to do it, I can tell you.
Democratic countries actually don't invade their neighbors. Democratic countries don't harbor terrorists. Democratic countries don't use weapons of mass destruction. Don't use weapons of mass destruction.
Yeah, you know, America has always been pretty bad. I mean, it's been good. It as much as a nice place to live, well, kind of generally, as far as living standards go. But you know what I mean. It's just been terrible as far as world peace goes. You know, so many nations have suffered because of the actions of the United States. As painful as that might be for Americans to admit, it's the truth. I mean, it's always been bad, but America under Donald Trump is something else. I mean, it really is. We have not seen this level of aggression ever. And there's no other president in history that has bombed seven countries in their first year. You could say, well, it's his fifth year. But, well, you know, there was a break in the middle. So to have done the amount of damage that he's done and is continuing to do, making those threats just there against Colombia, against anybody we think is smuggling drugs, well, we're just going to kill you. We're going to ask questions later. But it seems to be the trend in the United States at the moment, and we'll get to that a little bit later. But this seems to be the trend, and this is, you know, the whole notion of preemptive strikes, like I was talking about, you know, that's been popularized and legalized, even though it isn't, by Israel with what it's done in Gaza and Palestine. And it's gotten crazy. He's even threatening Mexico now as well.
We are going to start now hitting land with regard to the cartels. The cartels are running Mexico. It's very, very sad to watch and see what's happened to that country.
Yeah, he's just like the globalists' attack dog. That's all he is. And he's just sending him in to take over anywhere they want to take over. Wants to bring down Cuba. Wants to attack Colombia, wants to take over Greenland, wants to bomb Mexico. The peace president wanted the Nobel Peace Prize. It's like he's throwing a tantrum. Well, you didn't give me the peace prize, so therefore I'm going to bomb everybody. It's just unreal. And some of the things they did, you know, like even when they went in and stole the Venezuelan president, which was kidnapping, pure and simple, they bombed Chavez's grave, Hugo Chavez's grave. I mean, you have to be a psychopath to do that. You absolutely would. And then they took him to New York and they paraded him through the streets of New York City in an open van so people could get a good look at the victim that they've captured. I mean, weren't they condemning Hamas for doing this sort of thing a couple of years ago, parading Israelis around and showing the people, look what we've caught? They just did the same thing. But is that what was really going on? Or were they just giving him a guided tour of New York? I mean, I don't know about you, but there's like four or five different photos of this guy in different clothes. So what happened when they went in there and kidnapped him? Did they give him time to pack his luggage or something? Seems very strange. The whole thing seems very contrived. They did talk about going in and having secret plans for Venezuela anyway. They didn't say they were going to go in there, but they said they had secret plans for Venezuela like years ago. Israel, of course.
Hello. Hi, Abe. I wanted to ask you since we met last about the issue of Venezuela. Mm-hmm. Because I heard voices kind of saying it's not so bad, and Latin America is not so bad, but I'm not convinced. And the question
you have good reason not to be convinced. You have good reason. It is getting worse.
Right.
And little by little, as long as oil money works.
I'm told that by our experts, it's the only, except for Iran. It's the only government-propagated anti-Semitism today around the world. It's
already formally. Right.
This is
first
quite scary.
Within the country and then outside.
So are you pressing in any way?
We've talked to Jesse Jackson, right. Has a relationship, but it's not for camera, but right. There are other plans.
We'll talk about it in a minute.
Mientras hablamos en esta asamblea, caen bombas en Gaza, donde Israel ha asesinado decenas de miles de niñas, niños, mujeres y hombres inocentes, con la complicidad de los gobiernos de los Estados Unidos de América y la Unión Europea. Se comete el mayor crimen de exterminio y genocidio que desde aquel perpetrado por Hitler en la Segunda Guerra Mundial. Hoy pretenden exportar su odio y destrucción a toda una región, bombardeando y asesinando inocentes en el Líbano, en Siria, y tratando de desestabilizar la República Islámica de Irán. Esto es una verdadera amenaza para la humanidad y la paz mundial. Una nueva forma de terrorismo se ha aplicado sobre el Líbano, con la complicidad de las empresas privadas que manejan las cadenas de suministro de las tecnologías de consumo masivo. Esto sienta un grave precedente que pone en riesgo la seguridad mundial. También bombardean infraestructuras civiles en este país, asesinando inocentes, tal cual hacen en Gaza. Israel se ha convertido en una maquinaria de muerte que debe ser detenida de inmediato.
Yeah, and then there was that guy who said that what just happened in Venezuela was very good for the Israelis.
Look at the implications here are really great for the Venezuelan people.
Yeah, oops, slip of the tongue. And then we hear that there was also something like 847 tons of silver shipped out of the country as well. So, you know, all this sort of strange stuff has happened. And this was big news about what's happened. And all of this stuff and attacking Venezuela and Trump talking about how he wants to do this and wants to do that, wants to go and pretty much bomb everybody. And then suddenly we see this shooting in Minneapolis. And this has completely divided people again, left and right. You know, who was in the right, who was in the wrong? You know, was he defending himself or was this unnecessary? And it's also completely removed attention from everything that was happening in Venezuela, a lot of which was done in Venezuela, remove attention from the fact that there's all of this stuff come out about the Epstein files. I mean, Trump is in deep shit. If any of this stuff comes to public attention, if they lull off a little bit at all and give people any time at all to be able to check out what's actually going on with this Epstein stuff, then they're going to lose what sort of tenuous grasp they have on control that they've got at the moment, because a lot of people are kind of interested about what's in the Epstein files. So they're giving us bombings of Venezuela, they're giving us shootings here and shootings there. Now they're giving us this whole bullshit scenario with this ICE shooting and making such a big kerfuffle out of it in Minnesota. And look, again, you know, the question is, was the guy in the right? Was he defending himself? Did he need to shoot the woman? And no, he didn't, folks. I mean, this is probably going to upset a lot of people by saying that, but when you look at it, no, he didn't need to shoot her at all. He was well out of the way. And this basically gives you a pretty good analysis of what actually happened from a pretty non-biased perspective.
On Wednesday, in Minneapolis, a federal agent fatally shot a motorist, 37-year-old Renee Nicole Good. Trump administration officials said these were, quote, defensive shots, fired because the officer was being run over.
And a woman attacked them and those surrounding them and attempted to run them over.
But our analysis of bystander footage, filmed from different angles, appears to show the agent was not in the path of the victim's SUV when he fired three shots at close range. Here's how events unfolded. Moments before the shooting, the victim's maroon SUV is stopped in the middle of the street. Multiple unmarked federal vehicles are idling nearby. Secretary Noem alleged the motorist, quote, was blocking the officers in. Bystanders are blowing whistles and yelling at federal agents.
Go home to Texas!
Then, federal vehicles start moving toward the maroon SUV, with sirens and lights blaring. A federal agent films the scene on his phone. The driver rolls forward slightly, turning left. then stops and waves for others to go ahead. Two agents exit this silver pickup and walk toward the vehicle. Moments later, shots are fired. Let's look at the scene again more closely. This is the agent who shoots the driver. He walks around the car filming and disappears from view. Other agents pull up and order the driver to exit her vehicle. One of them grabs at the door handle and reaches inside. The SUV reverses, then turns right, apparently attempting to leave. At the same time, the agent filming crosses toward the left of the vehicle and grabs his gun. He opens fire on the motorist and continues shooting as she drives past. The moment the agent fires, he is standing here, to the left of the SUV, and the wheels are pointing to the right, away from the agent. This appears to conflict with allegations that the SUV was ramming or about to ram the officer. President Trump and others said the federal agent was hit by the SUV, often pointing to another video filmed from a different angle. And it's true that at this moment in this grainy low-resolution footage, it does look like the agent is being struck by the SUV. But when we synchronize it with the first clip, we can see the agent is not being run over. In fact, his feet are positioned away from the SUV. The SUV crashes into a white car parked down the road. A bystander runs toward the collision. The federal agents on scene do not appear to rush to provide emergency medical care. Eventually, the agent who shot the motorist approaches the vehicle. Seconds later, he turns back around and tells his colleagues to call 911.
Shame! You shot someone! You shot someone!
Agents block several bystanders who attempt to provide medical care, including one who identifies himself as a physician.
Can I go check a pulse?
No! Back up! Now!
I'm a physician!
Hey, I don't listen, care!
At the same time, several agents, including the agent who opened fire, get in their vehicles and drive off, apparently altering the active crime scene.
Yeah, and now there's even a further breakdown of that, showing that the guy was definitely clear of the vehicle when he opened fire on the woman. And don't forget that he shot three times and he actually shot her in the face. What's happening, brother?
What do we got here? We just pass each other now doing videos. That's basically what we do.
Yeah. Crazy, huh?
All the insanity.
Yeah. Yeah.
What are you talking about? Ice?
Ice. And, I mean, I've looked at all of that from all angles, and he didn't need to shoot her. He wasn't actually defending himself. It's... You know, there's so many different ways of looking at it, but, and the whole thing they're giving him is that, oh, well, he was actually dragged by a car previously. This same guy, what's the chances of this guy?
And he had 33 stitches when he got
33 dragged. Stitches, of
I think
course.
It was all a psychological operation. They're trying to start the Civil War.
You know, well, if he was still suffering from PSD from being dragged by a car, what the hell was he on the job, and what the hell was he doing standing in front of a vehicle? You know, they're obviously, but he'd stepped out of the way. When you look at the analysis, there's a couple of really good analysis that have come out, and he was well clear. And you can see from the angle of the bullet hole, he kind of had to lean over and shoot her. And he shot her face off, for God's sake. I mean, and then he put two more bullets into her head. I mean, the fact that it was three shots, I mean, She wasn't a threat. She was past him by the time he let off the first shot. So obviously he wasn't in imminent danger. He'd already got out of the way of the danger before he fired. So
yeah.
But it's interesting because there's all this stuff coming out now. What I've been saying and what I've been warning people of since 2014 is that all of our police forces are going and training in Israel with the IDF. And if we don't pay attention to what's going on in Gaza, then the way of Palestine will be the way of the world.
Look at what's happening every day. I've been there. I have trained with them. I have been to Israel where ICE agents and DEA agents and other three-letter agencies train with the Israelis, with the gendarmerie and the Israeli police force, training with them. And they bring those tactics back here. The oppression that we export, we bring it right back here. Look around. We are the ones suffering. Children in Gaza are suffering. Fathers, mothers, families are suffering. Every day on TV, we see a Palestinian father carrying their dead child. And little Marco and Ambassador Huckabee and our president make jokes and celebrate a ceasefire. What a joke. The ceasefire wasn't even in effect for 30 seconds before Israel dropped another bomb. And what did they say? Ah, we can get away with it. Wake up, people. Every day we pay Israel our tax dollars so they can continue to bomb and kill unarmed civilians. We bomb boats off the coast of Venezuela. We blow up Colombians in fishing boats and say, oops. If you don't think that won't come to your neighborhood, think again. I have seen it. It is coming. ICE agents train in Israel and they bring that back here and they bring the same tactics. You don't have to read the secret files to see what's happening on our streets every day.
The way of Palestine will be the way of the world. Yeah. And this is the way the Israelis treat the Palestinians.
Yeah.
And we've just seen it in Minneapolis. So this is how you react to someone driving away. You just shoot them in the face, you know, and then throw a couple more into their head as
but
they go past.
There's audio of the woman, too, saying, I'm going to pull up.
Yeah, yeah, she said, I'm pulling out.
I'm pulling out, yeah.
Yeah, I'm pulling out. And she was actually waving them past.
No! No! Shame!
The wheels were turning. She backed up. If she was going to run him over, she would have just run him over. You don't back up, you know. And it's crazy.
Crazy. It's crazy. Anyway, that's the world.
Enjoy.
I'll let you continue on.
So
yeah,
that's actually coming from. So yeah, I mean, do I have to? Talk about any more of that. I mean, honestly, she shouldn't have been there. And I've been saying to people for years and years that going and doing these active protests in your local towns is a bad idea. You just get yourself in trouble, get yourself shot. This is what happens. She might have been a good woman, but she shouldn't have been there. I don't think she was trying to run the police officer down. But, you know, the whole thing compounded. She shouldn't have been there, and he shouldn't have overreacted the way he did. And he did absolutely overreact because he was clear of the vehicle before he let off even the first shot. And the fact that, you know, the angle of it. You can see that he was, the front, the bump fender was already past him. The front fender had already gone past him. You can see where the bullet hole is in the windscreen. So he overreacted. He shouldn't have shot her. She shouldn't have been there, but he shouldn't have shot her. And that's the crucial part. The crucial part is that if the police, now even ICE, were doing their job of policing, you know, the first duty of the police is supposed to be to serve the public and to protect the public. But that role shifted. They don't protect the public anymore. What they do is protect law, they uphold law, and they protect law. And that's all they're really interested in doing. He shouldn't have reacted that way. And the fact that that was his first reaction was to shoot her in the face. This spells a very bad time for the United States. And you've got politicians out there condoning this. And honestly, she was not trying to run the guy over. You can see from all of the footage that she was not trying to run the guy over. She just wanted to get out of there. And she said, yeah, I'm pulling out. But, you know, he overreacted. This shouldn't happen. And I would suggest that it's because so many of these police have trained with the IDF. And the IDF have absolutely no regard for human life. And as I've said so many times, folks, if we don't pay attention, the way of Palestine will be the way of the world. And now we're seeing it. This is exactly the way the IDF would have reacted to a Palestinian trying to run a checkpoint or disobey a command. You know, if their vehicle had been told to pull up and they said no, they were in a rush, that's what would have happened to them. No questions asked. And this guy will probably get away with what he's done because the media is going to push it that way, the government's going to push it that way, and they're going to legitimize this and legalize this. And this is what's coming to everybody's backyard.
So this is a gun, and when you have a gun, you can choose where you aim it. Let's say your gun is holstered and you're standing off to the side of the front of a vehicle. One, you could step aside and pop, pop, pop the tires, or everyone else standing around you could pop, pop, pop the tires. You could shimmy to the side, not pull out your weapon, and just write down the car's license plate and do a proper investigation. But no, from 3 feet away, an ICE agent named Steve held a gun to the face of a 37-year-old woman and shot her fucking face off today. This was not domestic terrorism. This is fascism. And all of you rah-rah MAGA who are saying, good shot, it will fall on your doorstep soon. It will be your family. It will be your friends. It will be you. Trump anxiety syndrome is a real thing. The entire world is anxious because of this one man and all of the puppet strings he is pulling.
Be very careful, folks. Be very careful of what you are allowing this president to do. I mean, he's just a puppet. But what he's doing is insane. I mean, threatening all these countries, threatening Mexico. I did a show months and months ago where I talked about this is isolationism. What he's doing is isolating the United States from everywhere else. And it's basically being used as Israel's attack dog at the moment. They flooded the place with migrants. They really want to see this, whatever they can do. I mean, they want destabilization on the ground. They don't really care, I mean, if you comply with Israel or if you don't comply with Israel or whatever, as long as your country is destabilized, flooded with migrants, and everybody is at loggerheads with everybody else, everybody's angry with everybody else, that's what they want. They want this war on the ground, and then they will create the system. They want order out of chaos. That's the plan. And I've said so many times, the only way you're ever going to bring down the United States is to do it from within. And that's what Trump's doing. Trust the plan, folks. Trust the plan. But Trump is effectively collapsing the United States from within. Even what he's done now, like the whole other side of him attacking Venezuela. I mean, this shows the world that, because, you know, Venezuela was developing its own monetary system, it was dealing with China, it was helping out Cuba, and they've even said, well, Cuba's going to fall now because it's not going to have access to any fuel, and we won't even have to attack it, it's just going to collapse because we're going to deprive it of everything we can. It's pure psychopathy. And that's the plan for that. And because Venezuela was sorting out its own monetary system and all that sort of stuff and doing its own trading, then it wasn't going to need the US dollar anymore. And this sends a message to the world that if you pull away from the dollar, well, we're going to bomb your country.
It's the juice.
It's who was that? Who was that masked man?
We just pass each other doing videos now. That's all we do.
So yeah, it's what was I saying? That's right, it sends a message to the world that if you pull away from the US dollar, if you are going to stop trading in US dollars, then we're going to bomb your country. So, and what this is doing, it's having the opposite effect that they wanted. It's causing a lot of people to really look at their relations with the United States and to find other means of trading. So it's going to collapse the dollar. This is all the stuff we warned about. It's all happening right now on Trump's watch, and he's doing it on purpose. And he's trying to really establish this world war on behalf of the state of Israel. Freaky times, folks. Really, really freaky times. But yeah, what's happened in Minnesota's really taken people's minds off everything else. They're still pushing for the Royal Commission and all this sort of stuff in Australia over the Bondi shooting, and the Prime Minister of Australia, Anthony Albanese, has actually folded and has agreed to have a Royal Commission, and they've appointed some trusted and true whatever person to do it who's done Royal Commissions before. I mean, they're all full of shit, Royal Commissions. They're just basically big cover-ups. But of course, the Jewish community in Australia is in an uproar because they haven't appointed someone who is an expert in anti-Semitism. Well, why would they need to be that? I mean, why do they want someone like that? Are they saying that they want a Jewish royal commissioner in there? Someone with a conflict of interests? Well, wouldn't you want someone that was going to look at this in a completely unbiased and open and honest manner and get to the bottom of what happened? You wouldn't want someone who's got an anti-Semitism bias and is going to be looking at it as the perspective that this was religiously motivated, because it may not have been religiously motivated. I mean, it doesn't sound like they're going to be happy unless they get a commissioner that absolutely finds the Australian government guilty of wrongdoing. Because there isn't really evidence that there was any wrongdoing. I mean, the greatest amount of evidence would indicate that Israel set this up themselves, where they always do. But I guess they want their own sort of a person in there, so they're never going to be happy. But they're pushing this, they're pushing that. It's been insane what's happened. Like, it's only 4 or 5 days since I did my last video. It's only like, we're only on the 8th or the 9th? I think it's the 9th. 9th of January. Bomb Venezuela, shooting by IDF-trained ICE police in Minnesota, Royal Commission going on in Australia. It's insane. And the whole trial with Maduro as well, the judge they appointed, this 92-year-old judge, it's insane. And how connected he is to everything else that's happened in the past. There was a thing I saw, I don't know if it's TikTok or Instagram or something, someone called the Ginger Theory, or it's Ginger Theory, and she connected a whole bunch of dots. Check this out.
Operation Absolute Resolve has been carried out, and President Maduro has been captured by the U.S., which is technically illegal under international law. Maduro and his wife appeared in court yesterday in Manhattan, and they both pleaded not guilty. The lawyer representing Maduro is Barry Pollack, a Washington lawyer who previously represented Julian Assange. The judge presiding over the case is Alvin Hellerstein, a 92-year-old, so boom, you should already be disbarred. He has been a judge in New York since being appointed by Bill Clinton in 1998, and he presided over almost all of the 9/11 court cases, including wrongful death suits against the airlines. He personally encouraged, kind of forced, the victims' families to accept settlement money instead of taking the cases to trial, which literally directly avoided the discovery, which means all the evidence would come to light. So one could say he participated in the 9/11 cover-up. Now, Maduro is vocally pro-Palestine and anti-Zionist. Judge Alvin is Orthodox and most likely a Zionist, not just because over 90% of Orthodox Jews support Zionism, but because of his family connections. His late sister immigrated to Israel. His late wife, Mildred, had Israeli connections. She served as treasurer and administrative vice president for the Ahmet Network in New York, which supports settler schools and homes for children in Israel. Also, his son, Joseph Z. Hellerstein, immigrated to Israel in 2001 and lives in an illegal Israeli settlement. He also happens to be a former American, now Israeli lawyer, and he worked with Ahmet Pollack in Madelon, a firm that represented and had close relationships with Kuki Erman and Company, a French-Israeli company headed by Roger Kuki Erman, a French-Jewish businessman. Roger was CEO of the Edmond de Rothschild Group and of the Israel General Bank, and several other venture capital firms established by the Rothschilds. Kuki Erman & Co. is also the parent company of ICTS. ICTS was the Israel-owned, Mossad-controlled airport security firm, which is the owner of Huntley USA, the passenger screening firm company that checked the passengers that boarded the aircrafts on 9/11. This was the key Israeli defendant in the 9/11 litigation that was being managed by his father, Judge Alvin Hellerstein. A trial that would have made ICTS and Huntley provide records to the court of what went on that day, including who ran their checkpoints and how 19 terrorists got onto the planes despite none of their names being on the manifestos. And his inappropriate connections to the case were noted in the court documents. Also, him and his son both worked for the Jewish law firm Struck, Struck & Levon, with Joseph, his son, working there while it was representing Silverstein Properties, while Larry Silverstein was purchasing the lease for the World Trade Center in July of 2001.
Yeah, you know, it's the same people all the time, folks. There always is. And it's crazy to see this happening, man. This is stuff that we've warned about for so long. And something else that I saw on the news, I think just this morning, was that Pauline Hanson's One Nation Party in Australia is now polling equal to whatever government is sitting at the moment. I don't know whether it's Liberal or Labor. No, I don't know. I can't tell. I can't tell any difference between them. It's been a uni-party system for so long. I mean, there's no real difference in whether you vote Liberal or Labor. The government always wins and the agenda still goes forward. But Pauline Hanson's One Nation Party, I mean, these guys, they say a lot of really good stuff about anti-immigration and everything that we need the government to do, where everybody's actually treated as equal and don't just allow so much immigration. And by the same time, she totally capitulates to the state of Israel. She supports what they're doing to the Palestinians, supports the genocide of Gaza. She's even been seen to go to Parliament House wearing an Israeli scarf. She's also gone to Parliament House wearing a burqa in a protest of what all Australian women will be forced to do under her belief. This is where we're going, because she sees it as the Muslim menace. And it's not. It's the fact that Israeli NGOs are flooding the West with Arab migrants or Middle Eastern migrants. Not all of them are Muslims. A lot of them are criminals. They're just people who don't fit in because of the sheer volume of them that are being brought in at a time. They're not being given a chance to assimilate with the countries they're coming to. You know, bring 100,000 migrants into Australia in a year, they don't have a chance to blend in and assimilate with the local population, take on Australian ways. It's the same with what they're doing in England. It's the same as what they've done in Europe. There have been villages in Europe that have had 4,000 to 6,000 people in the villages, and they've had 10,000 to 12,000 migrants arrive to those villages. You know, how can you possibly say they're going to assimilate with the local culture? This has all been done by design. At first, they go and bomb, stage of 9/11 attacks, and then they get the United States to go and bomb all these Middle Eastern countries because Israel says they're all a threat. When it was Israel who staged the 9/11 attacks, I mean, let's be honest about it. And so that drives all of these people out of their countries, turns their countries into just war zones. I mean, you know, 9/11 happened, the United States, you need to get up, go bomb all these Muslim countries. So they did, and now all these people have generationally grown up through warfare in the last 25 years. You've got children that have grown up into it. We're into the second or third generation of children that have grown up into this warfare world that they were born into. And now these people that are like 20 years old and 25 years old, remember the 9/11 attacks happened in 2001. So most of this has happened in the last 25 years. So you get people who are 30 or 35 to 20, and they have grown up into a world of war. I mean, even if you were 10 years old when the United States started bombing your country, if you were 10 years old when you lived in Libya, when they hit Libya, whatever, everything that's happened in the last 25 years, they've destroyed these countries, and all these children have grown up into that, and now they've been flooded into Europe. And the people that have brought them into Europe and Western countries and Australia and Canada and the United States have all been Israeli NGOs. This is how they do it. They flood the world with Arabs who are completely disconnected because they've grown up in hell, basically. You couldn't really call them Muslims. You couldn't really call them anything. They are disconnected. They don't know anything but take what you can get. That's all they know, because that's the life that they've had. You get them, you give them all cell phones, make sure they got all that technology, and you make porn free on the internet. Give them the image that Western girls just like rough sex, they like to be gangbanged, that you just pull them off the street and have sex with them. Feed that concept into them and then ship them all to Western countries. Who do you suppose thinks up stuff like this, folks? Think about it. Pretty devious sort of plans, but that's what's happened. And now a lot of people in European countries and Western countries are saying, well, we've got to do something about these Muslim rape gangs. And I've tried to say for years, they're not actually Muslims, they're just Arabs. They might come from what you predominantly see to be a Muslim country, but ultimately they're just Arabs that have been brought up to behave the way they behave deliberately, and then they've been flooded into your country deliberately. And it's all been done by the same people. And as I've said before, everything that you've seen around the world in the last 80 years, everything that has caused hardship around the world, so many things, the decline of Europe, the decline of the United States, the decline of America, the standard of living in Australia, everywhere, the price of everything's gone up and the standard of living has gone down. Industries have been moved. Everything's basically gone wrong in most of the Western world. Africa's fallen into decline. South America has had massive deforestation problems and corruption problems. And when that doesn't work, they ship in drug cartels by creating a demand for a drug in the West, and then they go and set it up in places in South America so they can produce it and ship it to the West, people like the CIA and Mossad. And then, of course, they blame these countries for shipping drugs to the United States when they need a new war, they need a victim, they need someone to blame, they need an excuse to go in and take out a country. which is what they've done with Venezuela. And they did this fully wagging the dog, because there are not even any drugs being produced in Venezuela. Certainly no fentanyl. It's involved in possibly 5% of the cocaine trade, only because cocaine is shipped through Venezuela, not because they produce any themselves. So using drugs as an excuse to go and bomb Venezuela was completely and totally fictional. You know, there are no drugs coming from Venezuela, but this is how they do it. They set everything up and put all the dominoes in place to get the result that they want. And now they're consolidating their power, folks. That's what all this is about. And they just want to put everybody against everybody else. Like I said, that's why they brought all the Muslims in, or all the Arabs into your country. Because these aren't all Muslims. They just want you to think that they're Muslims. They just want you to think it's a war of Islam against the West. And by attacking these people, you're attacking Islam. In some ways, I guess you are. I've tried to tell people, that explain to them that Allah is simply the Aramaic word for God. It isn't like it's a different God. It is a different God to the Jewish God, Yahweh, who Christians have been tricked into worshipping, when that isn't God, it's the Jewish God, who's a bigoted, racist God who demands sacrifice and all sorts of terrible things, and who was called by the Gnostics Yaldabaoth, and said to be the head of the Archons. But anyway, that's another story. But it isn't really a war of Muslim against Christian. It's just a war of depopulation. That's what they want. That's what these devil worshippers in this little country in the Middle East, in Israel, who has been the only country to benefit from all of the decline of the Western world over the last 80 years. Like I was saying before, man, everything has gone into decline in all countries except one. And that country has seen massive, massive advances, and now it's about to make massive advances in land as well, while everybody else lapses into war and decline. They've been able to do this by presenting themselves as being the victim, and we're always at war, we're always under attack, which they're not, but they've done that, and they've been able to portray that image by having West Bank and Gaza there, keeping that little area of Palestine alive, keeping Gaza alive, but separated from West Bank, so that there can never be any type of united political system or any type of autonomy. They want to make sure that Fatah and Hamas, or Hamas and the Palestinian Authority, never get together for any meetings or can talk about anything, or, you know, start to agree on any type of common ground, because that might create some sort of unity. They don't want any of that. But they need Gaza there. They put Hamas in there themselves to fire rockets over into Israel all the time, so they could claim that they're under attack all the time, so people would send them lots of money, which is how they've been able to make such massive gains. I mean, you look at the size of Gaza. It's 25 miles long, 4.5 miles wide at its widest point. West Bank is 20 miles away. It's covered in checkpoints. No one can do anything there and get away with it. Can't even go to the shop and get away with it. How is Gaza such a threat to Israel that it needs the amount of weapons funding that it gets? Billions and billions of dollars. How? How does it, why does it need this? Iron Dome, all this sort of stuff. It isn't like it's under attack from Iran and all these countries all the time. The threat, basically, it's been saying, is Hamas. Hezbollah, you know, they make it sound mean. They've been stealing land from Lebanon, and I mean, Hezbollah was simply a resistance that was formed to stop Israel stealing Lebanese land, because the government wasn't doing anything about it. So it sort of started off as a militia force, and it took a lot of the land back, and it looked after the people, made sure they had electricity, made sure everyone was looked after, because Israel was doing terrible things. That's how Hezbollah was created. So these people aren't attacking Israel all the time. It doesn't need all the money that it gets. It's got it, and it's done it, So it can set up its own weapons industry and just do what it's doing. And the whole world is going to decline while this has been happening. And now this is a big consolidation of its power. This is the whole thing that they want. And that's what Trump is doing. He's there to be the attack dog for this country and to take over the world. And the goal is to exterminate as many people as they can. That's what they want. It's pretty evil, but that's what they want. So, yeah. I mean, it's hard, folks, talking about all this sort of stuff and seeing it all rolling out so dramatically in your face right now. And again, even with this shooting in Minnesota, I mean, this has kind of legalized what the IDF do to the Palestinians. Just now you're seeing this in American cities.
I go check a poll.
No, back up, now.
I'm a physician.
Hey, listen, I understand. We got EMS coming, and I get it. Just give us a second. We have medics on scene. We have our own medics.
Where are they? Where are they? How can I relax? You just killed my fucking neighbor. You caught butter in the fucking face. You killed my fucking neighbor. How do you show up to work every day? How the fuck do you do this every day? You're killing my neighbors. You're stealing my neighbors. What the fuck, man?
Notably, they said in the article that it was done near East 33rd Street. Not on East 33rd Street, but near East 33rd Street. So they had to mention 33 in the article, as if to put a sign out to their friends out there to say, it's all okay, we've got it under control. We can make this work to our agenda. But they've kind of legalized this type of treatment. And this is a very dangerous time for the United States, folks. Like I said, no matter how you look at that video of that cop, there was no need for him to have shot her. He could have simply taken the license plate. He was not in any imminent danger at all. He had got out of the way of the vehicle. And you can even tell that by where the bullet hole was placed in the windscreen. He could have shot her in the torso through the door. He could have shot the tires. They could have just got the license plate and gone after her. He didn't have to shoot her in the face and then shoot her twice more as she was driving away when the threat was most certainly over. Of course, she was already dead when she was driving away. The only reason she kept accelerating, I would say, would have been because of the weight of the dead body on the accelerator. But it was unnecessary. Sure, she shouldn't have been there. She did the wrong thing. She should have obeyed the command. She should have just got out of the car. Perhaps she was just pulling over, like she said. Debate. Ultimately, it's the wrong way to protest. The best form of protest is non-compliance, disconnecting yourself from the system completely in every single way that you possibly can, but still allowing yourself to have, like, you know, freedom of movement and access to money and stuff, you know, one foot in, one foot out. But keep as disconnected from it as you can. Talk to people, create awareness. You don't need to go and put yourself in harm's way, so it was silly for her to have been there, but again, it was terrible that the ICE agent overreacted the way he did and shot someone when it was completely unnecessary for him to do so. There were much other better ways he could have done things. And again, the interesting thing is that a lot of these people have trained with the IDF. I don't know if he had. There's actually no confirmation that he had trained with the IDF, but many of the people in ICE have. Apparently 120 ICE agents in the Chicago area alone all trained with IDF.
group that I associate myself with went through some public records and found over 2,000 ICE agents, right? Well, throughout those 2,000 ICE agents, specifically 121 of them, right, had experience as an ex-IDF soldier. If you went up and down this entire list of individuals, you'd notice that their last names in particular, right, all lead back to one specific location with no other job experience. And maybe it won't let me post it because it's personal information. I have no idea. But there's literally a whole motherfucking list of these people, and they all look the same. Which tells me exactly why they're choosing to hide their faces, because just imagine, right, if some information like that were to get out, which is why I'm making this video once again. I'm just saying, if you look into the background of these specific individuals, you might notice that they're not exactly a US citizen. That in itself would prove everything, especially why they're acting the way that they are.
And that's just in one city. So you got to question how many of these former IDF people are scattered throughout ICE working as mercenaries for the US government. You got to wonder. Crazy stuff, folks. But anyway, I think that's about all I've got to say. We're in for such a crazy year. Trump comes and bombs Mexico again for the cartels. The cartels are in control of Mexico. It's a terrible place. It's just absolutely terrible. I mean, yeah, look how terrible it is, folks. Children playing down there. That's a boulder, a couple of boulders that came down in the earthquake. Children playing down there in the road. Beautiful sunset, peaceful. Puerto Marquez, beautiful sunset coming on the horizon. Beautiful bay out there, beautiful inlet. If I walk down a bit, you see boats and stuff in the harbour. So terrible. We went out to an event, or not really an event, the other day. There's a place in, here in Mexico, where there's an event called Reyes Magos. Reyes Magos. And it means three wise men. And it is a time when it comes after a new year, and where they give extra presents out after Christmas and after New Year, they give extra presents out to the children. And every year, I mean, Jeff, who people claim is such a scammer and never does anything for anybody, every year he actually spends about $5,000 and he buys like two truckloads of toys. I mean, see this white truck down here, the big ute. Put it down, there's Jeff doing a walk and talk down here. You see this big truck here, and there's another one up there, up the other end of the road there. He gets them, and he gets this big black SUV as well, and another couple of cars, and they fill it full of toys. And they go to some of the poor communities in the area, and they spend 2 days going out. They go to about 10 places a day. And all of the local kids from the orphanages and the local places come out, and they hand out toys to them on this specific day, which is, I think, maybe the 4th or the 5th of January, pretty close to New Year. And yeah, it's really beautiful. That's what they do. And I went with them to do that last week.
Kids first.
This is a day in Mexico called Reyes Magos. Reyes Magos. It means three wise men. And they say because three wise men came and gave gifts to Jesus, now they come and give gifts to all the children on this particular day, which I think is about the 5th or the 6th of January. I'd have to check the date. But they just come, Jeff gets a couple of truckloads of gifts, like they got a whole RV, you can see over there.
full of gifts and stuff to the children, so it's just something that they do every year. They're all so excited. So excited, folks. It's such a special occasion seeing kids this happy. We're here in Puerto Marquez at the moment. Beautiful place, folks. Yeah. Acapulco. But the family's doing this all day. They go to about 10 different locations and they give out presents to all the local children. They go to the orphanages and give out presents to the orphanages. It's a beautiful thing to see. And the kids are so excited. Yeah, really good to see that sort of stuff. So that's terrible Mexico that Trump says he needs to come and bomb. It's unbelievable, folks. I mean, any drugs that are being smuggled into the United States through Mexico are being smuggled in there by Americans working with cartels in northern Mexico. And it's all interrelated. But that's going to be the new thing. We're going to use drugs as a means to bypass Congress and say we can go and bomb anybody we like and take out anybody we want. Unbelievable. Even when they kidnap Maduro, one of the charges that they've got against him is possession of a machine gun, because he's being tried in New York, and under New York law, you're not allowed to possess a machine gun. He's the president of Venezuela. What, did he have his machine gun with him? Did he bring his machine gun? Did you allow him to pack his machine gun? And when you allowed him to pack his clothes, so he had five changes of clothes to go through in 2 days as well, perhaps that's what happened. But I mean, absurd, completely absurd charges. But it seems to have dropped out of the news now. No one's really talking about what's going on with Maduro. So it's going to be interesting to see where that goes. All part of the plan, folks, all part of the plan. But I would expect to see a big pullback from the US dollar because of what has just happened in Venezuela. No one's going to want to trade in this currency anymore. Everyone's going to want to pull away from this as quickly as they possibly can. I mean, whatever you think of Maduro, what Trump did was an act of war. It was an act of terrorism, really. It wasn't even war. It was an act of terrorism. They went in there, they bombed a country, bombed a grave site, a historical site, killed 80 people, and they kidnapped the president of a sovereign nation without any declaration of war, without anything. And then they took him back to New York and they paraded him around in an open van like some kind of political trophy. And they're going to hold some sort of a mock trial being presided over by a judge who's fully connected to all the wrong people. It's, do you think they'll get away with it? Yeah, probably. The thing is, nobody's talking about it anymore. I mean, this is a major thing. You know? And all the talk there was of all the parties in the streets and all of the crowds, which were all fake. All of them were fake. I was pointing out on X, they're all fake. You're publishing videos that are 18 months old. Some of them were like 6 years old. There was one video from 2019 they were publishing. I think it was even from Chile or something. And they're saying this is people on the ground in Venezuela celebrating Maduro's arrest, which was bullshit. And there was another one which was from 2024 they were saying was celebrating Maduro's arrest, which was complete bullshit. And people are posting them and they're not even withdrawing their statements. Like people like Alex Jones, all sorts of pretty big names, are all posting completely misleading videos saying how much the people of Venezuela are partying. people on the ground in Venezuela are saying things are very uncertain. I've got a friend on the ground in Venezuela. Actually, I've got two. I've got someone who lives a fair way out of Caracas, out in the mountains, and it's pretty okay there. And I've got the guy who used to work at the bar, his girlfriend is actually in Caracas, and she said it's pretty bad at the moment. There are a lot of people are actually protesting, saying, yeah, we want Maduro, he's our president, whatever we think of him and how much we don't like him and how much he stole the election, you can't come into our country and steal our president. Let us have the vote on what happens with this guy. Let us get rid of him in our own way. Stay out of our affairs, please. Because he hasn't been sending any drugs to you. And they know that the only reason they've really taken him down is because he's pulling away from the petrodollar. And Trump wants that oil. Apparently a lot of American companies are saying they don't want to deal with that oil. So, because they don't want to be involved, they don't want to have blood on their hands. Who knows? Yeah, who knows what you hear and what's the truth? But she's saying that there are cops that are going around basically in bike gangs. Like, you get a gang of 6 to 10 cops on motorbikes, and they're going around and stopping people on the street, asking to see their ID, asking to see their phones, looking at their WhatsApp, and looking for comments that are celebrating the capture of Maduro. And if they find that on your social media, then they are basically finding you on the spot. They're saying that you're breaking the law, they want to arrest you, or you've got to give them however much money. So they're basically just going around in gangs and extorting money from people over what their social media posts might be. It's in Caracas, and so not a lot of people are going out because this is what's going on. So don't believe anything that you're seeing on social media, folks. And since when has any country that the United States has gone into to overthrow the government, when has good things happened to that country? Not for very long. And it's never what they present you as being. Even with the upcoming war on Iran that Israel wants to do, they're saying Islam is about to be defeated. Really, so if you go in there and you bomb the shit out of the country and cause the current sitting politicians to flee, and then impose your Shah, the son of the previous Shah, who was a tyrant. So you're saying if you do this and you just have regime change in Iran, then that's going to be the end of Islam, is it? Interesting. I mean, Iran is a 90 to 99% Islamic country. That's the pervasive religious belief. It just happens to be the belief of those sitting in the government as well. So you've got a reasonably strict, reasonably religiously based, so therefore totalitarianly based political system, because religion and government should never be combined. You end up with a fascist theocracy, as Frank Zappa warned us of. This is the same for any government. If you had a government populated by Orthodox Christians who followed things to the letter and it would only do what it says in the Bible, it would be a very tyrannical system. It'd be the same for any religion, same for Islam, same for Judaism, which is basically what Zionism is. Now, those, you know, and Kabbalistic Zionists, being the worst of all, who take an extremist view of everything and say that they must basically kill everybody else who isn't a Jew. That's basically the foundation of their religious system. And the problem is you've got these type of people in control of the Israeli government, which is why you have so much bloodshed coming out and being supported by this place. And because you have religionists in control of Iran, then you also have an extremist ideology which is forced on the citizens. If you get rid of the Islamic government, that's great. That's great. You don't want a religious-based government. But by doing so, you're not going to destroy Islam. The only way you're going to destroy Islam is if you carpet bomb Iran and kill 99% of the people who currently live there, because they're Islamists by choice. And even if you put in a democratic government, you know, take the Ayatollah out of power, put in the Shah and have a democratic government. Well, you're still going to find that 99% of the country are still Islamic, and they're still going to go and pray at mosques and do what they do. It's not going to change anything. You're not defeating Islam. You're simply putting in regime change and putting in a regime that is more friendly to Israel and is going to promise not to shoot back when Israel takes over the Middle East and creates greater Israel and wipes out Jordan and Lebanon and Syria and absorbs all of these countries and the Sinai and the northern part of Saudi Arabia and the eastern part of Egypt as far as the Nile. When Israel absorbs all of these places, you're not going to fight back or shoot back or complain, because you will be our friend and you know these are our traditional lands and you don't want to be seen as anti-Semitic, do you? And of course he has already been and pledged his allegiance to the devil anyway, the guy they want to appoint as the new Shah. So that's the plan. It's not about defeating Islam. They want simply to defeat the West by bringing Arabs into the West and having you perceive that all of these Arabs represent Islam when they don't. They represent young Arabs that have grown up in a war zone and aren't right in the head by design, as I was explaining before. They flooded all these into your country and told you that there's going to be rapes, there's going to be pillages, there's going to be plundering, and it's all because these guys, because they're Islam. So there's going to be war on the ground, and ultimately they're going to outnumber most of the white people, and that'll be the end of our countries, which is what they want. Destabilization. And of course, once this all starts on the ground, well, there's going to be the need for more police, isn't there? Going to be the need for more laws. So, you know, because there's so much crime. And how's crime created? I've gone through it before. Crime is created because they create laws. Every time they create a new law, they create a new crime. You know? And, oh my God, more crime. I need more police. More police. So that means we need more laws. More laws, more crime, more police. It's this never-ending circle that goes on and on and on and on endlessly until we end up where we are now. So, yeah. Crazy times, folks. Really, really crazy times. Who knows what's going to happen just in the next couple of weeks? But there's so much going on. You know, this bombing of Venezuela and the kidnapping of the president, basically legalizing all these preemptive strikes, saying he wants to go into Colombia, saying he wants to take over Cuba, wants to come and bomb here in Mexico. Suddenly you're seeing ICE agents just shooting people in the face. Like I said, whether you think she was right or wrong, she was in the wrong spot, she did the wrong thing, but it didn't require that type of response at all. At all. If you think that that shooting was justified, actually, I mean, you may just well be a psychopath. So I would suggest you go and examine your inner self a little bit better, because I mean, after what I showed you before, when you really look and analyze that video, no, he didn't need to shoot her. His life was in no immediate threat. Doesn't matter whether the road was slippery, whether he was this and whether she was that, and you know, clearly she reversed, clearly the wheels were turning, clearly she said something about I'm just pulling out, or I'm just pulling over. I think she said I'm just pulling out, so she was just pulling out of the driveway or something, I don't know. But when you look at it all, there's no way that shooting was justified, and like I said, if you believe it was, and you may well be a psychopath, and I suggest you go and take a long, hard look at yourself. But anyway, folks, I'm going to leave it there for now. Thank you for joining me on this report. I look forward to seeing those of you who are coming to an Acapulco. Yeah, I still don't know what I'm going to be doing. Jeff's leaving here, I think, in 3 days. And then I don't know what I'm doing. I'll probably go back to the United States and catch up with my friend there. If they're in a position for me to do so. I'm not quite sure where they are at the moment. I know they are moving house, and so it just depends where they are, whether I should go now or whether I should leave it for a little while. But I'll get that done. I'm going to be kind of drifting and bumping around, I'd say, until I go to Puerto Vallarta in February. Who knows, I may end up at Jeff's ranch for a couple of weeks in the meantime, or may, I don't know. Or like I said, I may go back to United States and end up there for a month. I just don't know what's happening at the moment. So yeah, but I'll stay in touch anyway, and I'll keep you posted. I mean, things are moving so quickly. I can't believe all the stuff that's happened just in the last 5 days. And I'm sorry if this report was a little discombobulated. I just got a lot on my mind. Like I said, Jeff's leaving here in a couple of days. I've got to figure out where I'm going to be and what I'm going to do and where I'm going to end up, and make sure most of my stuff ends up wherever it is I'm going to be. So I got all sorts of stuff going on. So weird, just kind of floating around like this. But anyway, folks, I'm going to leave it there for now. Thank you to anybody who sends me a kind email or a kind word or leaves a kind comment. Thank you to anybody who shares the information. Thank you to anybody who's ever made a donation or a contribution to the website. It's very, very appreciated. Thank you to everybody out there on the front line speaking out and making a difference. And enjoy the ride, folks, because we are certainly in for a hell of a show. I'm going to leave you now with a little story about World War II that many people don't know. I've mentioned it many times. There was a book written by a guy called Theodor Kaufmann. The name of the book was Germany Must Perish. It came out in 1941, and it talked about the need to exterminate the German people. The chosen method was sterilization. And they're very, very serious about this, and they called this the final solution to the Jewish problem. This was coined by a Jewish man, and the Jewish problem was the fact that Germany exists, because Germany was still connected to the old ways. That's why they used the swastika. The swastika is an 11,000-year-old symbol. Going way back, you know, it's actually the white heritage symbol. If you look at the Nordic stories, look at the Vedas. There's a Vedas called the Sentis Perun Vedas, which is basically the history of the white people. And it's got a swastika on the cover. That's basically, and it talks about Thor and Odin and all this sort of stuff, the Norse gods. Very interesting. But that's what Hitler was using it in relation to. But they saw the German people, because they were still in possession of a lot of the old knowledge and a lot of the old ways. Very, very good at manufacturing, very best quality steel, best quality everything. If it was German quality, knives, weapons, whatever, German quality was always the best quality. Even in World War II, they had the best quality uniforms. I mean, the German army was definitely the best dressed army of World War II. So, you know, whatever you think of the Germans. So they really wanted to get rid of the German people. Plus, I mean, they'd moved to Germany, they tried to co-opt all of that. They'd gone there and they'd set up all sorts of debauchery, they'd taken over the money system, all sorts of stuff like that. Hitler came along, kicked them all out in 1933 with the transfer agreement, sent them all down to Palestine. He wanted to send them to Madagascar, but they demanded that he send them to Palestine, so he did. Along with all their wealth, moved all that down there with them in the form of farming equipment that they were able to sell and reclaim their wealth once they got to Palestine. And he basically set up the funding and the population for what was later to become Israel in the transfer agreement. A lot of the Germans were actually rounded up. They were put on trains. A lot of the German Jews were rounded up. They were put on trains and they were sent to camps, and they were given tattoos, some of them, because they wanted to know their blood types and things. I mean, the German soldiers had tattoos as well, and these were for blood types and things. The German soldiers had them actually under their arm, and these were for blood types. So if they got caught in battle or anything like that, then the medics would know their blood type. They'd know all about them. They'd know how to treat them.
So how would you explain, obviously, the tattoos that have been...
Tattoos? No, that's very, very simple. German soldiers had tattoos under their armpit. The elite forces of the German people, the SS, had their blood groups under the armpit. You know why? Because when they were shot at or were hurt with a grenade and something ripped into their body, when they were unconscious, the medic could know what blood group they were. So the tattoo was a life-saving measure. There's nothing sinister about these tattoos. It's only the way you interpret it. The Germans gave, unfortunately, to some Jews in some camps, these tattoos. Not all of them. You know what many Jews did after the war? For a package of Lucky Strike cigarettes, they got themselves tattoos. If they were in camps where they were not tattooed. Because by flashing that tattoo, they got twice the ration coupons, could eat twice as well, could get seats on a streetcar and subway when others had to stand, could get preferred treatment in finding rooms to live in bombed-out Europe. In other words, it became a ticket to easy street. Many of the Jews who flashed their numbers had them put in DP camps after the Second World War. How do we know that? Because there is a thick, fat book, typical German efficiency, and in that book are all the numbers issued in blocks, just like you get license plate for a car, and all kinds of the most fanciful numbers are showing up in survivors. And I had a judge sitting right over there, a restitution judge, in this chair, telling me how these Jews would come to him, flash their numbers, he would go for the book, and then there was embarrassment all around when the number didn't show up in any of the books. Books issued by the German government. These people were cheats and cons. I'm not saying all Jews are cheats and cons.
And some of the people who went down to camps in the transfer agreement went down to Palestine. These people were rounded up, put on trains, taken to camps. They were trained how to live in the desert because they'd been living in cold minus zero Germany in winter and shit, and they're going to send them down to Palestine. And so they trained them how to live in the desert, and then they sent them down to Palestine in 1933. So when people talk about being rounded up and put on trains and taken to camps, well, yeah, they were. But a lot of them were actually transferred down to Germany because these camps actually existed in 1933. And it's a paper trail for this. It's all very, very provable. There's no paper trail for the Holocaust, but there is one for the transfer agreement. But anyway, having said all that, they didn't like being kicked out of Germany because Germany they saw as the real root and base of white heritage, the heritage of the white race. Most of us are of Germanic descent. Even English is a Germanic language. I mean, you know, it's all related. And Germany was very independent, it's very powerful, had the best technology, and it had strong Aryan roots. And they really needed to sever those roots. And so this guy, Theodor Kaufmann, after the Jews were expelled, had a plan to exterminate the German people because he thought that would be the only way to really move the Jewish cause forward once they got hold of Palestine. And in many ways he's correct. I've often thought that one of the only ways we're ever going to be able to really wake up and save the white race is if there is a way to awaken the German people and remove them of the collective guilt that the German feels, because it's guilt for a crime that they never committed. And that's a really, really difficult thing to do, because most Germans have been programmed and trained and indoctrinated into believing that is their whole identity. They are criminals. They did a terrible thing. They tried to kill 6 million Jews. You must never question it. You must never try to elect any type of independent government again, because what you get is a Holocaust such as we saw in World War II, and we are all guilty, and we must never let that happen again. That's basically the German identity. That's a really sad thing to see. And until we can deal with that, I don't know. It's going to be tricky to wake up the white people, folks. But anyway, I'm going to leave it there for now. I'm going to leave you with a little video about Theodor Kaufmann's book, Germany Must Perish. It's good to see someone's actually made a little video about it. And I'll look forward to speaking to you again soon. Folks, please take very good care until then. In Lakesh.
The final solution of extermination was not proposed by a German Nazi, but rather by an American Jew. And it was not the extermination of Jews which he proposed, but the genocide of German Gentiles. Theodor Neumann Kaufmann advocated the genocidal sterilization of all Germans as a, quote, final solution in 1941 in his book Germany Must Perish. Here are relevant quotes from the evil book. Quote, this dynamic volume outlines a comprehensive plan for the extinction of the German nation and the total eradication from the earth of all her people. Also contained herein is a map illustrating the possible territorial dissection of Germany and the apportionment of her lands. Germany Must Perish presents a plan for the structure of a permanent and lasting peace among civilized nations, and there is one, and only one, such total penalty. Germany must perish forever, in fact, not in fancy. I feel no more personal hatred for these people, the Germans, than I might feel for a herd of wild animals or a cluster of poisonous reptiles. They have lost the wish to be human beings. They are but beasts. They must be dealt with as such. There is only one way to frustrate such a desire. The goal of world dominion must be removed from the reach of the German, and the only way to accomplish that is to remove the German from the world. The vicious virus of Germanism had been injected into the life stream of the public, and the Germans awaited the epidemic which they felt must sooner or later infest the world. Kaufmann continues, quote, a final solution, let Germany be policed forever by an international armed force, even if such a huge undertaking were feasible, life itself would not have it so. As war begets war, suppression begets rebellion, undreamed horrors would unfold. Thus we find that there is no middle course, no active mediation, no compromise to be compounded, no political or economic sharing to be considered. There is, in fine, no other solution except one, that Germany must perish forever from this earth. There remains now but to determine the best way, the most practical and expeditious manner in which the ultimate penalty must be levied upon the German nation. Quite naturally, massacre and wholesale execution must be ruled out. In addition to being impractical when applied to a population of some 70 million, such methods are inconsistent with the moral obligations and ethical practices of civilization. There remains the but one mode of ridding the world forever of Germanism, and that is to stem the source from which issue those war-lusted souls by preventing the people of Germany from ever again reproducing their kind. This modern method, known to science as eugenic sterilization, is at once practical, humane, and thorough. Sterilization has become a byword of science as the best means of ridding the human race of its misfits, the degenerate, the insane, the hereditary criminal. The population of Germany, excluding conquered and annexed territories, is about 70 million, almost equally divided between male and female. To achieve the purpose of German extinction, it would be necessary to only sterilize some 48 million, a figure which excludes, because of their limited power to procreate, males over 60 years of age and females over 45. Taking 20,000 surgeons as an arbitrary number, and on the assumption that each will perform a minimum of 25 operations daily, it would take no more than 1 month at the maximum to complete their sterilization. The balance of the male civilian population of Germany could be treated within 3 months. Another staunch proponent of the genocide of Germans was Ilya Ehrenberg, a notorious Jewish communist propagandist from the Soviet Union who, like his kinsman Theodor Kaufmann, agitated for genocide against Germans during the Second World War. Ehrenberg's hate-filled, genocide-yearning exhortations to the Soviet Red Army inspired the mass rape of several million German women by the Red Army at the war's end. In one leaflet entitled Kill, Ehrenberg incited the simple Russian soldier to treat the Germans as subhuman. The final paragraph concludes, quote, the Germans are not human beings. From now on, the word German is the most horrible curse. From now on, the word German strikes us to the quick. We have nothing to discuss. We will not get excited. We will kill. If you have not killed at least one German a day, you have wasted that day. If you cannot kill a German with a bullet, then kill him with your bayonet. If your part of the front is quiet and there is no fighting, then kill a German in the meantime. If you have already killed a German, then kill another one. There is nothing more amusing to us than a heap of German corpses. Don't count the days, don't count the kilometers, count only one thing, the number of Germans you have killed. Kill the Germans, kill the Germans, kill. Appealing to the lowest, most subhuman instincts of this Bolshevik horde, he reiterated his genocidal message, quote, kill, kill, in the German race there is nothing but evil. Not one among the living, not one among the yet unborn, but is evil. Use force and break the racial pride of these German women. Take them as your lawful booty. Kill, as you storm onward, kill, you gallant soldiers of the Red Army. Why is the world largely unaware of this Jewish final solution to German people? The world is likewise kept in the dark about the Jewish final solution to Russian people. In 1919, Jewish communist butcher Grigory Zinoviev is quoted in a speech advocating the annihilation of 10 million Russians. He said, and I quote, "To overcome our enemies, we must have our socialist militarism. We must win over to our side 90 million out of the 100 million of population of Russia under the Soviets. As for the rest, we have nothing to say to them. They must be annihilated," unquote. On a side note, the phrase, "the final solution to the Jewish question," is a direct quote from the Zionist Manifesto published in 1897 and was referring to the creation of a Jewish homeland or state. It was a phrase coined by Zionists and was commonly used in Zionist literature throughout the late 1800s and early 1900s, long before the Nazis came to power in Germany in 1933.